Okay, I better stop there. And this is the perfect segue to the next summary from Ross Frederick, who'll be describing pediatric mediastinal masses. Proton beam has been touted as a better treatment for children, given the lack of exit dose that can spare surrounding structures and potentially diminish the risk of secondary malignancies that might arise decades later in these patients.
Mediastinal masses in children, radiologic pathologic correlation. Most pediatric masses in the chest are located in the mediastinum. These masses are often initially detected incidentally on chest radiographs in asymptomatic children, although some patients may present with respiratory symptoms. For the past few decades, the approach to diagnosing mediastinal masses has been largely based on the anatomic location determined by using the lateral chest radiograph, whereby the radiographic division is based on the Felsen method. Recently, an anatomic scheme based on cross-sectional imaging findings was developed by the International Thymic Malignancy Interest Group, which was applied to mediastinal tumors. With this system, the mediastinum is divided into prevascular, visceral, and paravertebral compartments and mirrors the original classification scheme, in which the mediastinum is divided into anterior, middle, and posterior compartments on lateral radiographs. This newer classification has the advantage of facilitating standardized classification of the mediastinal compartments on the basis of anatomy seen at cross-sectional imaging. This can help the radiologist describe mediastinal masses and develop relevant differential diagnoses. I will now discuss common pediatric mediastinal lesions and masses, focusing on their imaging features. However, you should check out the actual article because their RadPath correlations are quite useful and interesting, and make the imaging appearances more intuitive. As mentioned, the newer system divides the mediastinum into the prevascular, visceral, and paravertebral compartments, all of which are bounded superiorly by the thoracic inlet and inferiorly by the diaphragm. Let's start with the prevascular compartment, which is defined anteriorly by the sternum, laterally by the parietal mediastinal pleura, and posteriorly by the anterior surface of the pericardium. These lesions occurring in the prevascular compartment include thymic lesions, vascular lesions, germ cell tumors, and lymphoma. Now let's discuss the thymus. True thymic hyperplasia is characterized by an overall increase in size of the thymus in response to resolution of physiologic stress. Now why do we care about thymic hyperplasia? Because it's important to differentiate from thymic neoplasms and can be a diagnostic challenge. Thymic rebound hyperplasia typically shows diffuse enlargement, a fine mixture of fat and lymphoid tissue, a smooth contour, and normal vessels. In contrast, thymic neoplasia is usually associated with a nodular contour and frequently contains necrotic or calcified foci. Thymic cysts are rare and may be congenital or acquired. A solid component is typically excluded at MRI, and the lack of enhancement of these cysts characterizes them and distinguishes them from other lesions. Thymolipoma is a rare, benign, discrete fatty mass of the thymus that manifests in individuals from infancy to adulthood. It is characterized by slow growth and a pliable nature and is usually incidentally discovered. The fat component predominates in thymolipomas, and at imaging, they average a whopping 20 centimeters in diameter at the time of diagnosis, and appear predominantly as fatty masses with soft tissue nodules and septa. They are well defined and connected to the thymic bed without aggressive features. Lymphoma is the third most common pediatric malignancy and the most common mediastinal mass in children, with a mean age of diagnosis of 12 years. Lymphomas can be broadly classified into Hodgkin lymphoma and non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Non-Hodgkin lymphoma is more common in children younger than 10 years. On CT images, Hodgkin lymphoma appears as a large, lobulated, heterogeneous mass, most commonly in the prevascular mediastinum. On the other hand, non-Hodgkin lymphoma usually appears as diffuse enlargement and nodularity of the thymus. Both of these tumors can result in massive adenopathy in the superior mediastinum that may exert mass effect on the airway. Evaluation for potential tracheal compression is vital before performing CT, as supine positioning can lead to worsening airway compromise. CT and FDG PET CT remain the mainstays for disease staging and surveillance. FDG PET can also aid in guiding biopsy to sample viable tumor cells. After treatment, Hodgkin lymphoma may show residual benign mediastinal tissue with necrotic and fibrotic components in most cases, owing to the fibrous component of the common nodular sclerosing subtype. Residual tissue is rare in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Moving on to vascular anomalies, which can be classified into two broad categories, vascular malformations and vascular neoplasms. Vascular malformations do not contain proliferative endothelium and are also present at birth. Vascular malformations can be further subdivided into fast flow lesions, which contain arteries, and slow flow lesions, which do not contain arteries. Lymphatic malformations are caused by the failure of developing fetal lymph channels to communicate with the systemic venous system, resulting in the development of dilated channels and cysts containing chyle. Lymphatic malformations are classified as macrocystic, with cysts larger than 1 cm, or microcystic, where the cysts are less than 1 cm, or combinations of the two. The most common sites of involvement are the neck, face, and axilla. These lesions tend to cross fascial boundaries involving multiple anatomic spaces. At imaging, macrocystic portions appear as multiseptated cysts, while the microcystic portions appear solid. Macrocystic portions exert mass effect on adjacent structures, while microcystic components show infiltrative growth patterns. The protein-rich cyst contents are T2 hyperintense and T1 variable depending on protein content, and often contain hematocrit levels from prior intracystic hemorrhages. Blood flow and contrast enhancement are not detected in the macrocystic contents, which do not communicate with the venous system. In contrast, enhancement and flow are seen in the septa and microcystic components. Purely microcystic malformations can be a diagnostic challenge because they can appear as nonspecific, solid, enhancing masses. Venous malformations are also present from birth and can occur in the prevascular mediastinum. On imaging studies, the contents of the dilated channels have the appearance of fluid. Unlike lymphatic malformations, venous malformations communicate with the central venous system. Consequently, they enlarge in response to dependent positioning or the Valsalva maneuver and have slow flow at Doppler ultrasound interrogation and enhancement with intravenous contrast. Enhancement patterns vary from homogeneous to heterogeneous and from faint to vivid, and the enhancement may be delayed, requiring multi-phase imaging. Because of the slow flow, the channels may become thrombosed, leading to phlebolith formation. Infantile hemangioma falls under the vascular neoplasm category and is the most common tumor of infancy. Infantile hemangiomas are not present at birth and have a predictable natural history of initial proliferation followed by involution that starts when a child is about 1 year old. At imaging evaluation, infantile hemangiomas are quite vascular, with arterial and venous spectral waveforms on Doppler ultrasound images, and intense uniform enhancement following contrast administration. Large feeding arteries and draining veins are well delineated on MR images. The mass is hyperintense on T2-weighted MRI images. The margins of the mass are well defined throughout. Germ cell tumors are the third most common tumors of the mediastinum in children, following lymphoma and neurogenic tumors. They usually occur in the prevascular mediastinum. Germ cell tumors can be divided into seminomatous and non-seminomatous types. Non-seminomatous germ cell tumors include yolk sac tumors, choriocarcinomas, embryonal carcinomas, teratomas, and mixed tumors. In children younger than 8 years, teratomas and yolk sac tumors account for almost all reported cases of mediastinal germ cell tumors. After puberty, mature teratomas and seminomas predominate, and these tumors occur almost exclusively in males. Calcifications are present in 25% of mediastinal teratomas, and the presence of fat, fluid attenuation cystic components, and calcifications in an anterior mediastinal mass is characteristic of this diagnosis. Seminoma and non-seminomatous germ cell tumors other than teratoma typically have poorly defined margins and are often locally invasive. Now that we've knocked out prevascular lesions, let's adventure posteriorly into the visceral compartment, which is defined anteriorly by the anterior surface of the pericardium and posteriorly by a vertical line 1 centimeter posterior to the anterior margin of the spine. Foregut duplication cysts include bronchogenic, neuroenteric, and enteric cysts. Surgical resection is generally recommended, even in asymptomatic patients, to establish the diagnosis and prevent complications such as infection, hemorrhage, or rarely, malignant transformation. Enlargement of the mediastinal lymph nodes can be caused by a variety of pediatric disorders, including primary or metastatic malignancy, Castleman disease, and infection. Moving on to the paravertebral compartment. The paravertebral compartment is defined anteriorly by that vertical line 1 centimeter posterior to the anterior margin of the spine, and posterolaterally by a vertical line along the posterior margin of the chest wall at the lateral aspect of the transverse processes. The major contents of the paravertebral compartment are the thoracic spine and paravertebral soft tissues. Tumors of neurogenic origin include neuroblastoma, ganglioneuroblastoma, and ganglioneuroma, with neuroblastoma being the most primitive and aggressive, and ganglioneuroma being the most differentiated and least aggressive. Cross-sectional imaging is necessary to evaluate imaging-defined risk factors, which are used to stratify a patient diagnosed with neuroblastoma before treatment, and describe the extent of tumor in relation to adjacent structures and vessels. In the chest, this involves evaluation of tracheal or segmental bronchial compression, encasement of the aorta and its major branches, and infiltration of the costovertebral junction between the T9 and T12 vertebrae. MRI is the preferred method to evaluate for intraspinal extension of tumor. Peripheral nerve sheath tumors include benign schwannomas and neurofibromas, and malignant peripheral nerve sheath tumors. Peripheral nerve sheath tumors are indistinguishable radiologically. They are often smooth, lobular paraspinal masses with sharp margins. Changes in the adjacent bones, including rib erosion, remodeling, and splaying, are seen in half of patients. On CT, the split fat sign of fat attenuation of the displaced fat covering that overlies the neurovascular bundle surrounding the soft tissue mass may be seen. At MRI, peripheral nerve sheath tumors generally have very high signal intensity on T2-weighted images, and can also have a target appearance with peripheral high signal intensity and central low to intermediate signal intensity. The target appearance is typically seen in neurofibromas, but can also be seen in schwannomas. Extension into the spinal canal can give rise to a dumbbell configuration. Imaging findings that suggest a diagnosis of malignant peripheral nerve sheath tumors include rapid growth, loss of the target appearance, local invasion, pleural effusion, and osseous destruction. FDG PET is an excellent tool for differentiating malignant from benign peripheral nerve sheath tumors. All right, let's recap by discussing the distinguishing features and differential diagnosis of masses based on their compartment. Prevascular tumors consist of thymic lesions, vascular abnormalities, germ cell tumors, and lymphoma. A cyst in the prevascular compartment may represent a thymic cyst or lymphatic malformation. Multiple septa in the cyst suggests a lymphatic malformation, and the presence of chylous effusion and or lytic bone lesions further supports this diagnosis. Both thymic hyperplasia and thymolipoma contain fat. The fat in thymic hyperplasia is microscopic fat, which is evident at chemical shift imaging, whereas thymolipomas contain macroscopic or nodular fat. The finding of an enhancing mass suggests venous malformation or infantile hemangioma. In venous malformations, the channels enhance more slowly owing to the lack of an arterial component. In contrast, infantile hemangiomas enhance more briskly and intensely because they contain large feeding arteries. Solid masses most commonly represent germ cell tumors or lymphoma. Teratomas can be distinguished by the presence of fat, fluid, and calcification. Non-seminomatous germ cell tumors and seminomas lack specific features but tend to be more heterogeneous in appearance than lymphoma. Diffuse enlargement of the thymus with nodularity and mass effect on adjacent structures suggests lymphoma. Let's differentiate between visceral compartment lesions. Although cysts in the visceral compartment of the mediastinum commonly represent foregut duplication cysts, a pericardial cyst arising from the pericardial sac may be indistinguishable from a foregut duplication cyst. The imaging findings of a pericardial cyst are identical to those of a foregut duplication cyst, but the location and the costophrenic angle suggest the diagnosis of pericardial cyst. Regarding the finding of lymphadenopathy, high attenuation lymph nodes on non-contrast CT images suggest Castleman disease. Concomitant segmental or lobar consolidation in the lungs suggests tuberculosis, with calcification of the nodes indicating latent infection. Sarcoid is a rare differential consideration for lymphadenopathy in the pediatric population. Now, how do we distinguish lesions of the paravertebral compartment? Neurogenic tumors and peripheral nerve sheath tumors are the main differential considerations for a solid paravertebral mass with or without invasion of the neural foramina. The presence of calcification in the tumor at imaging makes neuroblastic tumors the more likely diagnosis. Unlike peripheral nerve sheath tumors, neuroblastic tumors demonstrate MIBG avidity. A history of neurofibromatosis can suggest the diagnosis of peripheral nerve sheath tumor. In addition, the split fat sign is pathognomonic for peripheral nerve sheath tumors. Invasion of adjacent structures and rapid growth indicate malignant transformation of a peripheral nerve sheath tumor. Additional differential considerations for paraspinal masses include sequelae of infection, particularly tuberculosis. The most common site of osseous involvement is the spine. Spinal infection is usually the result of hematogenous seeding, commonly at the anterior vertebral body at the end plate. The infection can then spread to the adjacent disc and vertebral bodies, either through direct extension through the bone plate or beneath the anterior or posterior longitudinal ligaments.
Wow, thank you. There's so much to know about the mediastinum and mediastinal masses. That was a great review. You have to check out this article in the print journal or online because the pathology pictures, gross path, and microscopic are incredible. All right, that's it for this week's podcast. Join us again in 2 weeks for more summaries.